I saw something really interesting on the weekend. You probably saw this too, David. Two things came out of Google. They've updated the look of Google Glasses because, you know, let's face it, Google Glasses first edition looked a bit freaky. And they've updated the look of them so that they now actually look like a pair of fashionable glasses.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello and welcome to another episode of David versus David, the podcast for the small and medium business owner that we aim to help you work your way through the jungle that is website, internet marketing, advertising, and everything to do with getting your business out there and noticed in today's online and connected world. So it's me, David Pritchard, here in the UK, and down in sunny Tasmania is David Council, although I believe you're quite literally fighting fires at the moment, mate.
Yes, mate. I'm just watching a bushfire from here at Paradise Central. Very smoky outside, and there is, in fact, a watch and act in play for where I am. So if all of a sudden I just jump up and run away, there's a reasonable chance that I'm out extinguishing the car. Anyway, nothing to be joked about. There's
yes. The lengths we go to, listener, to bring you this kind of information. David with a hose in one hand
and a keyboard in the other.
Moving on.
So today we are going to run a question and answer episode. We get lots of questions with people writing in and, you know, wanting to know this and wanting to know that. And to a large extent, we just answer them. We've been answering them off air. Mm-hmm. But today I thought we might answer some of those questions from some of the listeners so that we can share that experience with everybody. So we'll start out with a question from Carol. Now, Carol shot us an email through the David versus David webpage, and Carol wanted to know, should you still be doing SEO or search engine optimization, or has Google changed everything with their recent updates? What do you think, David?
Yeah, well, as with most of these things in life, there's a bit of a yes and a bit of a no in that. The yes is that yes, you should still be doing SEO. The no is that that really a lot of the practices that have been used to improve search engine rankings for websites over the last few years have basically been, I suppose, manipulative to some degree. It's basically a lot of people, a lot of companies have offered services whereby they use what is known about the way that Google ranks websites, and they have tried to take advantage of that, kind of not unreasonably, I guess. You know, if there's something that you can do to get ahead in life, you quite often tend to do it if it's legal. So the question is, you know, what really has Google changed, and, you know, what may have worked in the past that are practices that Google didn't really approve of, and has tried to filter those methods out of its algorithms, so that you really want to be thinking about all the way through this about what does Google really want. Now, you've probably heard some of this before, you know, but this isn't groundbreaking stuff necessarily, but it is the core of what Google wants. Google wants to provide the best results to the people searching for whatever search term they're searching for, because that's the way that people keep coming back to it. If they provide complete rubbish, then people are going to get a bit racked off and they ain't going to come back. And if they don't come back, then that means that Google is less popular, and means that Google, people won't want to advertise with Google. I mean, and that's really, ultimately, Google makes its money from providing the best search results and providing adverts that are relevant to those search results. And if they've got less people visiting their website, their search engine, then they will have less people wanting to advertise, and those people will want to pay less because they're getting less eyeballs. So that's the absolute core of Google.
You actually build your website, though, for the person that you're trying to reach.
Yeah, but SEO is about getting them to find you, isn't it? I mean, if you've got a great website that does everything and says everything a person is going to want when they get there, that's great, but they've actually got to get there. And they've got to get there through one of several methods. One is search engine optimization, search result. One is paid for. You know, you can put adverts on. But again, you know, you put Google adverts out there, you're willing to pay for them. People still actually, you know, need to go to Google to find those adverts. So if the search engine results on Google start to just present loads of rubbish because people are manipulating the system, then people will stop going there. That's kind of Google's interest from my perspective. And, you know, alternatively, you can end up putting, and quite validly, and recommend this as well, you can promote your website through other things, physical adverts, radio adverts, TV adverts, whatever. Whatever means you have to drive people to your website, there's lots of them. But in terms of just search engines alone, you know, they have to maintain their integrity to some degree. And if people are manipulating, yeah, if you get 10 pages come up as the first 10 results for good business information or something like that, and it's all full of adverts for Viagra because it's been manipulated, you ain't going to keep searching for it, are you? No. Well, not for that anyway.
But I think fundamentally Google wants your website to have good content. And your customers want good content as well.
Yeah.
It's just that previously the focus had been all on keywords, you know, which was how you used to manipulate the system. Well, you know, Google is still looking for a component of keywords, but the algorithm is just so much smarter now that it's looking at at the response that you're, or the information that you're putting on your website, and determining whether or not that's valid for your customer. And therefore, so search engine optimization, it's not just about keywords anymore. What it's really about is, you know, how does this provide a decent solution for anyone that's searching the web? So what you've got to do is keep your focus on providing valid information, and of course, you know, keeping the revision mirror that you are using the sort of keywords and phrases that are valuable to your client. But don't overstuff, you know, your page with them.
Oh, no, that's right. You don't want to overstuff things. Google's had a history of having an algorithm. People have worked out kind of what works through trial and error, through empirical results and so on. And then that's become the SEO technique of the day. And then Google works out that, hey, people are manipulating us. And so they'll change the SEO algorithm. And then it takes a little while for people to work out what's going on again. But really, as you're really saying there, I think the fundamentals of what you should be doing have been consistent all along, which is you should be providing good, relevant content that's relevant to the kind of search term that people are using. And that really, it means you need some aspect of the keywords in your content, in the on what's called the on-page SEO, the page titles and stuff like that. And you've got to make sure that your website is crawlable. You know, I think we mentioned in a very early episode 5 or 6 maybe, you know, you need things like a robots.txt file in there.
Mm.
So without wishing to get too technical, but you know, you need to make sure that some of the basics of SEO are there. So you should be putting the basic signposts there for Google to find. But what has been quite popular over the last few years from SEO has been this thing called link building.
Mm.
And the way that Google has worked in the past is that links are important. Other websites linking to your website would indicate that your website or that page of content has got some relevant to what the topic is. In the old days, it just used to be, hey, the more links the merrier. So you'd merrily whistle off, like, you know, 5,000 links or 10,000 links over a few months' time and give your website a nice big boost. Then Google sort of twigged that that's what was going on, and people were just paying for cheap links and stuff. So then it's sort of, what's the anchor text of these links? And if all the anchor text was exactly the same, that looked a bit suspicious as well. So that got a big hit. So now we're looking at things like having what would be a sensible link profile. You know, if all your anchor texts are exactly the same, said that's going to look a bit suspicious. So people have started making link profiles. So some links will point straight to your homepage. Some links will have different anchor text. Some links will say click here and so on. Again, you've got to ask yourself what's pushing the bounds of manipulative behavior with this. If you're paying for those kind of links to be built, you're probably going to get caught out sooner or later. And Google will just get cleverer or start to get more aware of what their people like Google Plus users are actually interested in. So they'll be taking probably more note of, you know, if you're registered with Google Plus and you're interested in sports cars and whatever, then they're going to be not entirely unsurprised if you start linking to car sites or, you know, drag racing sites or whatever. And those links will probably have more value. So they're just going to get clever over time. So get the basic signposts right for SEO and the good content right and put the pointers on your site, and then think very carefully about how you move forward with what's called off-page content, the off-page SEO, the links back to your site. And you really don't want to be doing anything silly and dangerous like popping off and buying 1,000 links that somebody's promised you will get you shooting straight up to the top of Google, 'cause,
yeah.
But it ain't. It ain't gonna, is it?
No. You know, I actually agree. I think the most valuable links that you can have come from Google-owned companies. So, you know, YouTube, Google+, you know, they're valuable links. And I don't know this for a fact, but I just can't see that Google isn't going to give them weight inside their search engine because it's to their benefit.
Well, because they know most about them as well, don't they? I mean, you know, they know where those links come from.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Again, you have to please, listener, you know, don't take this as, you know, we know the internal workings of Google, because we don't. But, you know, you can work out the way that Google is likely to be going ahead in the future, which is, you know, the more it knows about something and the more confidence it has in those assets, those people, those Google Plus users, those YouTube subscribers, the more authority it can give those assets. So it's going to be looking at its own world first, more and more. It would be kind of not safe to assume, but sensible to assume maybe.
Because there's a war going on here at the moment. It's not a war like you and I know war, but, you know, Google and Facebook are effectively at war with each other.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Facebook just recently has introduced a newsfeed. And by newsfeed, I don't mean, you know, what we know as newsfeed. You know, news stories coming up on its page that you can see just rolling through to keep you up to date, because what they're trying to do is keep you inside their universe. And what Google wants to do is just keep you inside their universe.
Absolutely. There's a reason that Google bought YouTube, which is a lot of people spend a lot of time on YouTube. And while they're on YouTube, they can get exposure to lots of adverts, which is where Google really makes its money. Same with Facebook. You know, they want you to spend time in their world because they'll have promoted posts for which they charge the business pages money and so on. So they really want you to be spending time on those main portals, I suppose, is not an unreasonable word to you. The doorway to their world and staying there.
I saw something really interesting on the weekend. You probably saw this too, David. Two things came out of Google. They've updated the look of Google Glasses because, you know, let's face it, Google Glasses first edition looked a bit freaky. And they've updated the look of them so that they now actually look like a pair of fashionable glasses. And the second thing is that they've just announced that they've just paid $500 million for an artificial intelligence company. Now, you can't tell me that they're not buying that company to help them with their development of a product that is going to be of a similar nature to Google Glasses, or for that matter, to improve Google Glasses. So, you know, these guys are not sitting still. This war is on, and, you know,
they're moving fast in all sorts of directions, and some of it will probably hit the dust. But some of it will become the de facto next big thing in 5 years' time or 10 years' time or 3 years' time or whatever. Anyway, we've kind of diverged slightly from that topic, but it gives the general sway of things is that Google is getting cleverer and cleverer, and ultimately the means for manipulation of search engine results through simple techniques is going to get harder and harder and more dangerous. So keep it genuine. Probably the best thing you can do, it's becoming a bit of a cliche at the moment, but it's probably true, is put more content out there in more places. So, you know, you put a blog post out there regularly, put a video out there on YouTube regularly, update a Google Plus page regularly, be real, put more Facebook posts out there, put Twitter stuff out there, put stuff out there, content though, that's reasonably good, informative content, create links back to your website from it, point people in the right direction. You put a YouTube video out there, the wordage that goes underneath, without stuffing it full of keywords and whatever, but you know, you can find out more on this subject at your website, and maybe embed the video on your website still, you know, say a link to a transcription of this video, visit this post at this website, blah, 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 blah. So you get the idea, more content, get yourself noticed in more places, cover the field, content here, there and everywhere that's realistic and original and good informative content. And you will start to get the SEO benefit.
Yeah, and that only helps you with your relationship with your customers.
Absolutely, and helps you get more customers too. Yeah. You know, more people will find you. So yeah,
yes.
I think hopefully that was a bit of a long queue and a bit of a short queue and a bit of a long A, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I'm just laughing here in the background. We're on a question and answer episode here, folks, and we've answered in half the show one question. Oh, well.
It's a big topic, and it's a topic that we've actually covered in probably
a lot of episodes.
The course of 3, 4, 5 episodes have, you know, gone into that in various detail. So, but anyway, I get asked that in my business quite a lot. You know, somebody's asked it through our site, and it's a reasonably common question, I guess. So, anyway, time to move on to the next question. Oh. Or do you want to add anything to that?
No, please, let's ask another question.
Okay, here's another one then. It's from Stephen, and his question is, what should I look to improve first on my website? Which is a bit of an open question. Any thoughts on if somebody's got a website, what should they be looking to improve?
I think this sort of relates back to the last question, I hate to say it, but it's about improving the information that your customer can absorb. So is that better product information? Is that better use of video on your website? Is that better instructional, like frequently asked questions type information? And you know, I do love frequently asked questions on websites, because from a search engine optimization point of view, they are quite effective. Just sort of harking back to the last question, but you know, where do you start? That really is a how long is a piece of string question, you know? Don't get bogged down in, you know, should I use blue over red? Just get it up. Get it out there and then start changing things one bit at a time and testing them. And if you can, do what's known as A-B testing. So, you know, you make one change two ways and work out which of those two ways got you a better result. And then when you've done that, move on to the next thing. But don't try and change lots and lots of things all at once. You know, think about your client. And think about how you can best communicate with your client by using your website. It's the center of this wheel.
Yeah, think about your client. That's something that you can use to strong effect or good effect, is depending what kind of business you're in, I suppose. You know, if you have relationships already with clients, ask them, you know, get them to cast their beady eye over your website and say, you know, do you find this useful? And ask them to be harsh with you. Tell them that, you know, you really want to get the benefit from it. If they actually have a turn off from looking at a website, you know, you need to know that, and they'd be doing you a favor by telling you that. I think I read a book years ago by the famous novelist Stephen King, who has a reader, who I think maybe his wife, maybe his best friend, I can't quite remember. But they read his book, the draft, as it comes along. They say, you know, this is great, this is crap, whatever, and give him the feedback. And you have a reader that you can trust to give you honest, really hard feedback. And that's how he ends up churning out, you know, great books, because he doesn't convince himself it's great. He lets somebody else convince him that it's great. So that's a good step you can take.
But one person though, David, not a committee.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, as soon as you get lots and lots of people involved, it becomes very difficult. So one person, not a committee.
Yeah. And that's where I said he has a trusted reader.
Yeah.
Somebody whose judgment and opinion he truly values is what I recall from that book. I think it's a book called How to Write or something like that. I can't quite remember. That's 15 years since I read it. But yeah, that's certainly one thing you can do. The other thing, of course, it's not about the intricacies of design. It's not about this shade of blue versus that shade of blue. Until you have a substantial enough number of people visiting your website to make the results of that A-B split test valid. You know, if you have 10 people visit your site and 6 of them say, or even 8 of them say, yeah, the blue version's better than the red version, it doesn't really mean anything, because, you know, that's the first 8 people out of the first 10. Until you get 100 or 200 or, you know, preferably 500 or whatever, that split test doesn't have any level of confidence in it. You know, it may be over different times of the week it was conducted. You know, you really want to think about split testing like that to make sure that the results of it are valid. You know, there's no point taking the results of that on a Tuesday to Friday if most of your traffic to your website occurs over a weekend, for example. Don't implement that change too soon based on a statistically invalid sample, perhaps. So probably I'd say one of the things you can do is drive more traffic to it.
And capture that traffic when it gets there so that you know who it is that's been to your website.
Yes.
So that you can continue to market to them and they're just not some sort of transient that's passing through your life.
Yeah, that's a good one. There's a lot of people have websites that there may as well be a billboard at the side of the road that has no telephone number on it or no means of contacting. It just tells you about what the product is, which is, you know, great in some ways. But if you want to make more use of it, then, as you say, capture them, give them some means to engage. But, you know, the best website, the most eye-catching, engaging, super-duper website in the world is no good if nobody's actually going there and nobody's visiting it. So drive traffic to it, one means or another. You know, if it costs you a couple of $100 in AdWords traffic or leaflets or whatever, radio ads, but if, you know, get traffic going to the website, then you can find out what they're doing. Because if they're all landing on your website thinking, that's crap, and backing off, you know, you need to change, you know, you can start working on what you need to change on the website. How's that sound, David? Anything else to add to that one?
That sounds really good. And I just have a sort of side tangent that I want to go on. You mentioned a billboard beside the road, and it just made me think of this because it's to do with return on investment. Because whatever you do, you need to get a decent return on investment. You know, you don't want to be spending lots and lots of money, hours, time, you know, trying to make a change if you're not going to get a return on investment. And the thing that built why billboards made me think of that was not having, you know, a little squirrel moment here, but I was talking to a billboard company in rural New South Wales. You know, so the nearest towns around it were towns of the size of 10,000 people, and this billboard company was trying to charge me $12,500 for a roadside billboard. Now, in a city like Hobart, that same billboard would be about $1,000, and we're talking a month here. So, you know, so this billboard was by a factor of 12 times more expensive. And then I said to them, "Well, can you give me the statistics on how many cars drive past that billboard so I can start working it out in terms of cost per thousand, whether that represents great value?" They didn't even have measurements on how many cars went by this billboard. They had just picked a number. And we're going to charge that. And some dumb bunnies out there were actually paying that, figuring that they were getting good value. And mostly that was being bought by people who were buying out of capital cities where, you know, if you're in Sydney, $12,000 a month for a billboard is nothing. You know, that's the sort of money that you pay for a billboard on the side of a milk bar in, you know, some back alley street. But, you know, it just goes to show that people don't understand how important it is to measure return on investment, to make sure that for the energy that you're expending and the dollar that you're spending, that you are getting good value. So, you know, sort of to tie it back to, you know, what should you improve? Whatever it is that you improve, make sure that you don't lavish too much time or money on it and not get a proportional increase in your traffic or your sales from your website for doing it.
Yeah, indeed. Hey, you know what? I've got a list of 5 or 6 questions here that we were going to cover. I'm going to jump ahead, actually, because I think one we've got here that ties in quite nicely. From Ken, what's the best way to buy radio commercials? And I imagine from that, he's sort of thinking, what's the most cost-effective way? What's going to give me the best return on investment? And, you know, you've covered billboards there. Yeah. I guess, you know, in the big wide world outside of websites and stuff to some degree, what is the best way to buy radio commercials?
Same answer as the billboards, Ken. It's return on investment. So where are your listeners listening? You know, what time of the day are they in their biggest number in any one quarter hour? So that's where you have to buy. You know, if there are 20,000 people listening at 8:15 in the morning that are your customers, not just listeners, your customers, then that's where you buy. Most radio stations want to sell you based on a time span, you know, which is known as breakfast, morning, afternoon, drive, or breakfast, morning, afternoon, drive, evening. Because they're trying to maximize their yield. Can't blame them for that. There's not a problem with that. But if you're trying to get bang for your buck, then you need to say to them, my customer is this profile, and give them the profile and then say to them, now you tell me, where are those people listening specifically in their biggest numbers as a proportion of your overall listenership? You know, so that profile might only be a couple of hundred people in the town that you're advertising in. But, you know, that's how you measure your return on investment. It's based on the number of people that are your customers for the dollar that you spent, as opposed to the number of people overall that are listening against the dollar that you spend. Because just like with those billboards, you know, if there are 20,000 cars that drive past that billboard, but only one of them's the person that I'm interested in, and they want $12,500 to reach that one person, seems like a pretty poor investment from my point of view. So then you would look for a different billboard site. Well, it's the same with radio. You would look for that quarter of an hour that has ads in it that your listeners are in their biggest possible number, and then flood that area.
Right. So, I mean, so if you have, say, only 300 people listening to the radio at the early morning session, say, you know, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, something like that in the morning, because thousands of people have listened from 7 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock, breakfast, drive time and all that sort of stuff. But it's a massive number of people, and there's only going to be a few that are really interested in what you've got. But really, you know that, hey, once, you know, let's say their mum's whatever, you know, they've... I won't be too sexist here because I actually take my kids to school, but you know, they've done the school run and all that sort of thing and they've got home. They just take that moment to chill out, and I appreciate I'm really digging a big hole for myself here because of course they're never going to chill out. They've got too much to do because I know I certainly do. They get that chance to have the radio on at home, 300 of them in that town listening to radio, but hey, you know, that's exactly your target market, and you've got 300 avid listeners. You're probably going to get a better deal for your spend. I'm guessing that's what you're saying there, really, isn't it? It's proportion and market.
Radio stations deal in cumulative audience and average audience per quarter hour. So there might be a cumulative audience of 70,000 people listening between, say, 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the morning. And between 3 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it may be the same. However, between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the morning, when you put your audience profile, like your customer profile in there, there might be, of that number, 300 of them might be your customer. Mm-hmm. However, the same cumulative amount of people at between 3 and 4 in the afternoon, when you put your customer profile in, there may be only 150 of them listening. So you're better off to spend in the morning to get that 300 than you are to spend in the afternoon for the same sort of amount of money to get 150. And that's why you measure on cost per thousand. How much does it cost you to reach 1,000 people that you want to reach? And that's how you compare apples with apples, because those two numbers for those two same cumulative audiences would be very different in terms of cost per thousand. So that's what you're trying to get to.
I've got to say, David's got a long and extensive background in radio, from being a DJ and broadcasting all the way through to managing, and now radio ads are a significant part of your business. So anybody that wants to take that further, you know, hands up, David's bagged that one, and feel free to engage and ask him all you want directly. He knows 99% more about the topic than I do on radio ads. So,
and I hate seeing people waste money.
Absolutely.
Mate, that's three questions, but we better wrap it up.
We've done some good content there. I think we've cracked up to half an hour or so. We've got some more questions. Shall we do another Q&A next week?
Absolutely. We'll try and pick out a few more questions and answers from emails that come in between now and next week, and we'll get to those two that we didn't get to. Not that you have any idea who they are because they didn't ask their questions, but trust us, there's two more questions we were going to answer, and we'll do that next time, plus a few. Think of it as a double album.
So, David, what should people be doing now as far as we're concerned?
Oh, look, please, folks, we love you. We really do, and we would really love it if you would go and leave a 5-star review for any of the episodes. We can see that there's lots of you out there because we see the stats coming in, and it's fabulous to see this community of people building up. But it helps us with the lovely people at iTunes, who are sort of not that dissimilar to the people at Google. So the way that they help us get us seen by more people is to get those 5-star reviews. So if you do that, that would be great. If you go to David versus David on our website, davidversusdavid.com, and leave a question. We would love to get an email from you with a question there, or comments in the episode. If you don't agree with something that we've said, let us know. We'd love to have the argument. We really enjoy it.
Absolutely. I was going to say, though, I don't know why, but I don't know if people are shy or whatever, but you know, we tend to get more questions and comments, people sending stuff directly, Facebook messages, emails, and whatever directly. I don't know if people don't like to leave the question straight on the website for everybody else to see, if they think it's a little bit personal to themselves. Perhaps it is. Perhaps, you know, you say, how can I do this for me? You know, what's the answer for my situation? Don't be afraid, you know, I mean, couch it in terms that that make it an open question for everybody, because other people will be interested. That's kind of why we've picked these ones out, because they're ones that everybody will be interested in.
I actually get a lot of questions come through on my LinkedIn page.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know what? I don't think has got any mention of the podcast on there. I really must, you know, behave myself and update that. But but people find me. You know, I've got a lot of people who follow what I do on LinkedIn. So I think that's possibly why I get them there. And I also get them through messages through my company Facebook page, which is also pretty interesting. You know, people sending me messages saying, hey, I just listened to the latest episode of David versus David. And, you know, a 14 paragraph message comes through after that. But that's okay. You know, I really like it. I'm glad that people are finding us. I'm glad that they're engaging and enjoying what it is that we have to say. And, you know, we really like helping people. This is what we do in our everyday business. So, you know, take advantage of it, guys, and you know, let us know what you want to know, because we would love to be answering some specific questions just for you.
You've just said something really good there, David, which is remember what your business is. All businesses, one way or another, are out there to help somebody. A garage helps keep your car on the road. A tire place helps keep your car going with new tires. A restaurant helps provide you with somewhere entertaining. Whatever your business is, unless you're helping somebody somewhere down the line, you haven't really got a client, really, have you?
No, that's right. Absolutely. It's all about, and that's, you know, helping other people and what is the benefit to them. So, yep, that's great.
Yep, indeed.
All right, mate. Well, one of our mobile phones is going subby here in the background. I can hear it chipping away in my ears. So that's as good a sign as any to say, hasta luego, goodbye, see you later, sayonara.
Yeah, good luck with the fires, David. I hope they don't get too close, mate, but you keep watering the place down.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, back out to keep my eye on that. Oh, look, a special shout out this week. I just want to say thanks very much to the person who edits this podcast for us every week. She does a fantastic job. So I just wanted to say thank you very much to May. Give yourself a round of applause, May. Leaves pause. Yeah, good on you. Well done. So thank you very much, May. We really appreciate all your hard work. That's awesome. And this has been another episode of David versus David. Squirrels back into the box. And we are out of here. See you later from paradise.
Indeed. Next week. Bye-bye.
You have just been listening to the David versus David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.